Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneau, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show. Truth Straight Up, brought to you by...
That's right. Chuck broadcasting today from the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle World Headquarters, which is completely appropriate because we're going to have columnist Ash Epp on at 3:30 talking about her column with the prosecutors continuing to persecute Tina Peters. The show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine, happytrees.co. It's that time of year, really. If you're looking to have some tree work done, happytrees.co is a place to go. And also Dendrocenogenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. Want to start off, though, and with and get your comments on this as well. Our comments, the Tucker Carlson conspiracy theories, trying to weed out fact, fiction, what we actually think, outright guesses, but should we say informed speculation. And want to also talk about Matt Taibbi did a great thing on all the lies that the corporate media has been telling, too. And bottom line, there was like too many for them to even count. They had to narrow it down to just one topic on MSNBC. And even then, it was almost countless. But if you want to comment, go ahead and comment. If you want to go ahead and talk, just either raise your hand or just unmute yourself and start talking. Or if you want to call, 888-627-6008. Oh, I already see. Is that you, Charlene? Is somebody there?
No, I didn't mean to.
Oh, okay. Okay. Do you want to comment? No, we're going to.
What's there to comment on?
Okay. Well, first, I want to talk about, so Tucker Carlson, there's all kinds of stuff out there floating around the past couple of days about, you know, was he fired? Was he this? Was he that? Is he going to do something? I was just reading something. And first of all, I think keeping in mind that most of the rest of the corporate legacy media hate Tucker Carlson with a passion, I'm just going to say, I don't really believe anything any of them say, a little bit with the exception of the Wall Street Journal, since Rupert Murdoch
owns the one I believe the least, because it's owned by Murdoch. And therefore, it's probably the least.
So we don't even believe them at all either.
Well, they're going to try to hedge it, you know, and right. the hedging one, they said that Lachlan and Susan Scott did the firing. And you know, that's not true from what we've heard. Lachlan and Tucker were very close. The more accurate one, the more logical one, is that Rupert, who's 92 years old and very fragile mentally and a little unstable, met with Lachlan on a tarmac, told him to fire Tucker, and he wasn't going to take no for an answer. And so he called Susan Scott and tell him he's been fired. And this is from the top, and don't say anything else, which she did. And so Tucker hired himself, a good corporate attorney, or a good contract attorney, who's also, I guess, representing Don Lemon.
Right.
And so that all seems to be the most likely one. Why'd they get rid of him? Our friend Peter Boyles thinks it's some deep, dark secret. I don't think it is.
No.
Obviously, he was annoying them after their Smartmatic, or I guess their Dominion, rather, lawsuit won, and he was going into January 6th. He wasn't going to just lay down for the accepted left-wing narrative, and they'd had enough of it, so they fired him. It's, in my mind, going to be the one of the few things that will really endanger Fox if Tucker gets on a rival one like OAN.
But
if, you know, if they gave him, let's say, the 6 o'clock time slot, it'd be interesting to compare the ratings between that and whoever.
Yeah, I see it a little differently, but that's not, Charlene does have her hand raised. So let's let Charlene.
Well, I do have an opinion on it. I think he was telling too much truth. You know, he's the only one that had Brandon Straka on there, the J6 prisoner. And then he also had Kennedy on there. And then he interviewed Trump, and I think they told him not to do that. So he was going ahead and doing what he thought was best, and despite what they said. So I think they just had, you know, couldn't stand that much truth being out there.
Yep.
And then, and I found out that he had many Democrat viewers as well as Republicans.
Right.
So he was really kind of bringing the right and left together, which they really can't have that.
No.
And, you know, it was like,
that's absolutely true. He was red pilled and he was enlightening people. Right. And they certainly can't have that. No, I think I agree with
you. He had Jimmy Dore on, he had Russell Brand on, and, you know, he was just kind of showing how the deep state is dividing and conquering. And, you know, he was pulling people together. And, you know, I think that, like they say, Rogan has an audience of 11 million on his podcast, and Tucker only had 3.5. So, I mean,
yeah, I'm not sure those are apples to apples, to tell you the truth.
Well, but it's viewers, though. I mean, Joe Rogan has an average of 11 million viewers per episode.
Yeah, Tucker had a lot, like our good friend who said he would take it down later in the day. And just go through it.
I understand there's some stream, but still, I think, but I agree with, I think, Charlene, that he has a potential to have a much bigger audience off of a cable TV network.
Yeah, right. And, you know, it would be nice if he went with a conservative news outlet, you know, like Newsmax or one of those, because, you know, people like to tune in and they'll watch one show after another, you know, so they like to have two or three in the lineup. But then, you know, he could probably do better financially just on having his own podcast, and people just set a time to tune in every day, you know.
Right.
Well, O.A.N. is the president of that city. He'd pay him $25 million a year, which is not chump change. I mean, it's a little more
than he was making
this show, but
yeah.
So, Tucker to the moon.
There you go.
I'm over and out.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Charlene. Well, you know, I have a little bit of a different theory than you do, Chuck. I think one thing that I agree with both of you in terms of the reasons, right? He was telling too much truth, and we'll play some sound later. He was over the weekend. He was clearly going after the legacy news media, including Fox, including people. He wasn't actually naming names, but he was getting pretty close to naming names. And you can't really do that for very long and tell the truth.
Think he is naming names. I think
no, he wasn't naming names. But what I mean is he was sort of going after, though, his own network.
I don't think he's going
let
after
me finish.
Them,
but... Well, he was telling the truth about him. I mean, that's he was telling.
What's interesting is disappointment in some people, but without
no, I'm going to play a soundbite here in a second. He was going after them, and telling the truth about them, and talking about how he didn't
well,
use. Here's
one question I want: who else in the news, other than Chuck and Julie, of course?
Yeah.
Do you absolutely trust is telling you what they view as the truth? Not what is the truth, because that's a very vague one, but what they actually believe to be the truth.
Right.
And he
was one of them.
I can't think of one.
And I think that was the great sin. And as Charlene said, he was uniting people. But what I suspect, I think it's interesting that they said in their statement it was a mutual agreement. And here's where I disagree with you a little bit in terms of him being fired. I don't think they would have said mutual agreement unless there was some sort of mutualness about it. I suspect what happened is, and maybe Rupert Murdoch started this, but they... If he had a contract, and I have a little bit of experience with TV contracts, a lot of times, for instance, it's written into your contract, you have a certain amount of, you know, editorial independence, and you have, you know, it might say that you have to have a staff, right? They can't like use the power of the purse against you, although they can a little bit. On the other hand, though, the contract also makes it clear the corporation has the final say, right? And so my sense would be that they called them up and said, you're not going to be doing this kind of stuff anymore. We're not, you know, we don't want Jack, you know, Schumer saying he's going to, you know, make new laws. We don't want him throwing us in jail. I don't think that the new producer lawsuit had very much to do with anything. That wasn't really. That wasn't a lawsuit against Tucker. That was a lawsuit against Fox. But at any rate, go ahead. Is that Jacob?
Hi. One quick thing I heard on that guy Mark Simone earlier in the week. The last episode that Tucker had was about the equity in mortgages. That means that if you got the better credit rating, you had to pay more fees to get the loan. Okay. and the banks, and then this week you and then later on you hear that Republic Bank, just the stock was stopped trading.
Right.
And what I think was that, if anything, the banks got pissed off at Tucker because he's trying to stop them from collecting their fees that they need to rebuild up to that bailed out all those Chinese people.
Right. So BlackRock owned a percentage of stock and the, you know, Fox Corporation as well. So now I don't think it was any one show. I think it was a culmination. And finally, somebody said, enough is enough. We can't have this much truth being told. We've got to stop him. And I think they probably called him and said, you can't do this anymore. You know, if you can live with that, fine. And of course, knowing he would say no. But here's my thing. There's been a lot of talk about,
you know, they said, we've agreed to part ways. You know, that's not exactly.
CNN didn't say that about.
We've agreed to part ways. I mean, you fire somebody, you go, all right, we've agreed to part ways.
Yeah, but I don't know that they would risk. Maybe I'm wrong. Obviously, we could all be wrong. But I don't know that they would risk him coming back like Don Lemon did. That's why I just sort of think they said, you're not doing this anymore. And he said, okay, then I'll leave. But here's the thing with he probably has in the contract, and this is what they're probably negotiating about, a no-compete clause. Typically, though, the no-compete clause, Chuck, is null if the corporation is the one that wants out, right? Normally, they can't hold that to you. Now, they can agree to pay you a certain amount, and as long as you're paid that amount, then you can't go someplace else. But I don't know that it would depend on the clause. I don't know if they could prevent him from doing a podcast, right? They might be able to prevent him from going to like another network, but I don't know how they could prevent him. Maybe, I mean, you're the lawyer, but I would think that would be really hard to find a way that you could prevent him from doing a podcast.
Well, you could put it in you can put anything in a contract, whether it's enforceable with our judiciary system and tatters as it is, I don't know, but you always put it in the contract.
The main reason, though, again, in my experience in TV, the main, because I mean, there are right to work, right, and laws. The main reason they put that kind of stuff in a contract is to discourage another entity, another company from hiring you, right? Because they know then they're going to have to fight. I mean, they do it to sort of like keep everybody from stealing hosts, right? So the main enforcement comes from the fact that somebody else, so like if you're working at Channel 7, or Fox 31, and I had like a 9-month no compete clause, right? That said, if I just quit, I couldn't work anywhere else in Denver. It could be someplace else for 9 months. And I think if people had challenged that, I probably could. But the same token, the other new Channel 9 isn't going to hire me because they have similar contracts. You see what I mean? That the enforcement comes from the other agencies' reluctance to hire.
Boyle's deal, and they fired him from iHeart. They gave him no money, and they tried to prevent him from going on to 710 KNUS. And in fact, we didn't begin at 710 KNUS because part of their agreement with iHeart was they wouldn't hire any other iHeart employees, and we were ex-iHeart employees. So, you know, and could have that have been challenged? Yeah, of course it could have. But
we don't know. Well, here, I'm going to play a soundbite that I think, you know, we played the sound the other day from the speech he made at the Heritage Foundation, where he was saying people are knowingly telling lies, stuff they don't believe. They have no problem doing that. And this was, he was on a podcast The Full Send podcast, a couple of 28-year-old, I think they're brothers. But if we could please play the Tucker Red Pill soundbite.
Media, like that is a big part of the revelation that's changed my life, is the media are part of the control apparatus. Like there's no, I know, because you're younger and smarter and you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
But what if you're me and you spent your whole life in that world, and to look around and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow. Not only are they part of the problem, but I spent most of my life being part of the problem defending the Iraq war. Like, I actually did that. Can you imagine if you did that?
Well, what do you think? What is one of your biggest regrets in your career?
Oh, defending the Iraq war.
That is it?
Well, I've had a million regrets. Not being more skeptical, calling people names when I should have listened to what they were saying. Look, when someone makes a claim, there's only one question that's important at the very beginning, which is the claim true or not? Mm. So I say, you know, you committed murder, or you rigged the last election, before you attack me as a crazy person for saying that, maybe you should explain whether you did it or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for too long, I participated in the culture where I was like, anyone who thinks outside these pre-prescribed lanes is crazy, is a conspiracy theorist. And I just really regret that. I'm ashamed that I did that. And partly it was age, partly it was the world that I grew up in. So when you look at me and you're like, yeah, of course they're part of the means of control, I'm like, that's obvious to you because you're 28, but I just didn't see it at all. And I'm ashamed of that.
Isn't that what the media tries to do, though?
It's their only purpose.
Right.
They're not here to inform you. Really? Even on the big things that really matter, like the economy and the war and COVID and like things that really matter that will affect you. No, their job is not to inform you. They are working for the small group of people who actually run the world. They're their servants. They're their Praetorian Guard. And we should treat them with maximum contempt because they have earned it.
Now, I'm just saying, Chuck, when you go on and he's not saying except everybody but Fox, you know, I can see where somebody in management might crack down on him. The thing is, though, he's telling the truth, right?
I don't think he could crack down on that. Is this other one where he's calling people Quislings and so forth was closer. But just right. to say that
what I mean, though, is
you're part
philosophically,
of the control apparatus.
Philosophically, Tucker Carlson, because here's the thing, guys, Tucker Carlson is right. The legacy media is part, and we're going to play some other sound here in a second and explain that, is part of the control apparatus. Tucker Carlson, Fox Corporation, is part Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham. They're part of the control apparatus.
Well, you feel like for 30 years you were part of the control apparatus?
No, but I got out 6 years ago, 7 years ago now.
No, he's talking about the Iraq War. He's talking about his whole life.
Well,
he's not saying, I just realized recently this happened. He said,
mine was,
the whole
I mean,
point
I was,
of it was to control the little people.
Right.
And in fact, enforced whatever heterodoxy there was from the people who had all the money or all the power.
And I think he was making it clear he wasn't going to do that anymore, right?
Know,
and he wasn't
but,
doing that
but
anymore.
But did you feel like you were part?
Do
you now recognize that you were a tool of the state?
It is. I will say this. It was a couple things. There's a huge difference between local news and national news, right? I didn't support or not support the Iraq. I mean, I didn't do any reporting. I think looking back, I was opposed to it, but I mean, I didn't do any reporting on the Iraq war, right? So I wouldn't have been a commentator speaking out. I was a reporter covering cops and crime and courts, right? But one of the reasons, one of the reasons I quit was it was becoming obvious that that's what was happening. You could no longer, I mean, I remember trying to say people, they were arrested and I called them an illegal alien because that's the actual legal term, right? And the management told me we couldn't use that term because it was racist sounding. And I would argue, right, but that's the actual legal term. That's like saying you can't say defendant because, you know, that sounds mean. It's like, right, but that's the actual legal term, you know, so things definitely were changing. And yeah, and I did say, no, don't want to do this anymore. Right. So now we do this. So I think, though, in the end, I think the sooner or later we may know or we may not. I think he's smart to not talk. Daily Mail caught him going to dinner with his wife last night and he sure looked happy. On the other hand, though, Tucker Carlson's been on TV for 30 years, so he probably knows
how
to look happy on
the
outside.
Daily Mail. Waiting for him, but he is smart enough rather than, you know, doing one of those
to smile and say,
laugh.
And then increase the security on the place where around the place where he lives. Right. So, but I want to talk a little bit more about the lies because it kind of ties in together, as does the Ash Epp thing. So, Matt Taibbi, he's one of the guys who did the Twitter files, right? And he said, you know, talking about the lies, as we've said, everything that was a conspiracy theory is now, oh, that's true. Oh, well, that's true. Oh, that's true, right? And one of the things he and his group of people wanted to do sort of as a research project was to go through some of the key lies and that we've particularly have been exposed by the Twitter files, right? And see how many lies like the corporate media had told and not retracted or corrected, right? And he said it was just so overwhelming. He said it was physically impossible to do. So then they're like, okay, well, let's just take the Hamilton 28 thing and that dashboard. Hamilton 28 was this censorship.
It's 88.
68. Hamilton 68. Hamilton 68. It was a Democrat progressive group that essentially had like a little dashboard, and they were claiming that some 600 Twitter accounts were actually Russian influencers, and they had the media reported on it breathlessly over and over again, and they would cite these things, and it turned out it was like, you know, Joe your neighbor. He wasn't a Russian influencer at all. He just happened to tweet something one day about Russia, and all of a sudden, and the whole thing was to push this fake narrative that Twitter was flooded with Russia bots, right, that were trying to influence things. And so they tried to go through corporate media, and there was too many there. So finally they just said, okay, we're just going to take a small segment of time on MSNBC and see how many times they reported on Hamilton 68 and quoted Hamilton 68 as a source, which they have never corrected. So if we could please play, and then they did a little video on it, which is funny. And the video itself is 11 minutes long with 179 lies. We don't play all of that. But if we could please play the portion that I had with MSNBC Lies, Thomas.
McCarthy publicly charges that the United States is invested with
foreign forces at work in our politics.
He says that he has a list of
600 Twitter accounts that appear to be linked to the Russian government.
That's a lie.
These Kremlin linked accounts.
These Kremlin linked accounts.
These Kremlin linked accounts.
Russian linked accounts.
Kremlin linked accounts.
A foreign influence.
Kremlin oriented Twitter accounts.
Kremlin linked Twitter accounts.
Russian linked Twitter accounts.
Impersonating Americans.
They are every day playing on social media. There's a website called Hamilton 68 that measures it.
This Russian influence tracker on Twitter.
The Russian dashboard. It's a real-time dashboard of Russian influence, you know, the Russian networks that we monitor.
Accounts allegedly linked to bots and trolls that are linked to Russia.
Russia linked accounts and bots according to a Russian tracker.
To track what Russian bots are doing.
Kremlin linked accounts.
Kremlin efforts.
Kremlin attacks.
The dashboard, Hamilton 68, determined that Russia was in the Alabama election. We know that the Russians were focused on this. These forensic sites show what the Russians are doing to us.
Interference from Russians.
These Russian intrusions.
Russian influenced Twitter
connected with Russia, we're interfering.
The impact of McCarthyism is felt across the United States.
The Russian bot poses a grave threat to democracy.
And it's like all of that was like not true, right? And they probably didn't think it was true anyway. I mean, that's where Tucker Carlson hopefully comes back and comes back soon, because the voice of truth will be missed. Because like Matt Taibbi, they went through and they said, no correction. No, he said Mother Jones finally said, oh, I guess that whole Hamilton 68 thing was a fraud. You know, but it's all part of this censorship industrial complex that we have going on now, where they set up fake things like that. Then they push sponsors to stay away from people who don't report on Hamilton 68, even though it's not even true, you know?
Yeah. Well, the big question, you know, we had our friend the other day say, you know, where are the Woodward and Bernsteins of reporters these days? And I have to think. And I said, well, Woodward and Bernstein weren't Woodward and Bernstein.
Right, yeah.
And I'm convinced, without actual solid proof, but that Woodward was naval intelligence. He was placed with the Washington Post's acknowledgement in the Washington Post to do the bidding of the deep state. He was a person who could not write. I mean, right. It's really tough when you're a reporter and you can't write in life. Was supposed to go to Harvard Law School, but decided to become a cub reporter for some local paper that's smaller than the Glendale Cherry Creek thing for almost no money, and then go over to there for a salary that was, you know, 1/10 of what he'd make coming out of Harvard Law School. He, to me, was naval intelligence, part of the deep state. And I think I've become like everybody else, I think, where you just question everything. I mean, nothing.
Right.
Nothing
right.
is as it appears. Everything is some kind of con. And
well,
that's
except
just
on our show. And Charlene, this is, she says, Tucker's going to have to buy our rights to Truth Straight Up for his new show. we'd do that for an interview or something. Oh, I think you're right. And I think it's interesting. I mean, looking at that, and I listened a little bit more of that podcast. So he's doing an interview with a couple of 28-year-old podcasters, right? Who are like apparently saying throughout the interview, we're stunned that you actually ever thought the media was trustworthy, right? And it's interesting how things have turned. I mean, that's where the newer generation is coming up, right? That there is no trust. All the surveys show that people don't trust the media, right or left, right? And people, I think, are increasingly turning towards they don't trust, I guess, what we would consider the legacy media. I think people are turning towards podcasts, you know, not just like ours, but whatever is out there, finding people that they kind of think are being straight. I think people are learning to, you know, like you say, look at things skeptically. And I think in the end, that's going to be the ultimate downfall. I mean, CNN isn't just losing audience because, you know, Don Lemon sucks. CNN is losing audience because people don't believe CNN. So they're not going to bother to tune in and listen to CNN. I think Fox was gaining a little bit of that, but I think they're going to be hurting, sort of like Budweiser, I think long-term as a result of this, because when I was at Fox 31, you know, they would have, you know, after every ratings period, which would come four times a year, they'd have a big meeting and they'd announce the ratings, right? And there was a time when they actually had strategies to try to increase ratings. And I'm not making this up. By the time I had left, and this was 7 years ago, the whole strategy was to not lose as many as somebody else. There wasn't even any discussion about growing your audience. They understood that wasn't going to happen. And I think that's got to be true of the networks too. They're losing audience, you know, and then you look at these 28-year-olds, they're like, yeah, why would we watch Fox? You know, it was almost humorous, that it was kind of cute and quaint of Tucker to have trusted them.
Well, another part of that interview, they thought, what's the worst thing that's happened over the thing? And he said, you know, in the age of internet, in which, you know, all this massive information is available to you at your fingertips, most people are getting less and less knowledgeable about anything. And it's true. I mean, it's absolutely, unless you are a sort of somebody who goes out and seeks it like we do, because we have a radio program and everything else. 20 years ago, all intelligent kind of citizens read the newspaper. I mean, they did. And so right. You knew what was, whatever the crooked thing was going on at the time. Right. Today, you know, there is no sharing of information. You know, you don't, if you go to MSNBC, you believe Hamilton 68 is just a great thing and the
right.
Russians are doing
yeah,
the
you're
box
still looking and, at it. Yeah.
And no one agrees about anything, to tell you the truth.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, one thing that's going to make it worse, and I don't think this is a whole intent of the ChatGPT, but now when you type something in the search engine, you can at least check, wake up. You can at least see what the websites are going to be, right? So you can see where they're sourcing you to. With the ChatGPT, it will just give you the answer. So you wouldn't even necessarily be like, so now if I search like Tucker Carlson fired, right? You can see, I can go to the MSNBC story and I'm pretty sure that that's going to be biased, right? But if you just have ChatGPT not even sourcing it for you, just giving you the answer, which granted is way easier, but I think it's going to be much harder than to, you know what I mean, to figure out where that's coming from. And again, even with the ChatGPT, it's not like it's searching the internet. It's using what's been inputted into it, basically.
All right, let me ask you the big question. Tucker Carlson post-Fox, is Tucker Carlson going to be a greater force or a lesser force?
Greater. I think he's going to be unleashed, basically. And he's going to, and I think that, you know, broadcast television is not where the future is. I think streaming online stuff, it can reach so many more people and be so much more powerful. I think he has to move quickly, though. I think if he waits too long, people will forget. People, I think, now are annoyed that he got fired. I think people want to hear what he has to say. So I hope whatever he does it quickly.
And Fox probably knows that too. So they'll try to string him out.
Right, right. On the other hand, you know, I'm looking at his place, you know, the Daily Mail, he's driving a little golf cart with his wife down a sandy trail, you know, on the beach going to dinner. I'm like, Tucker Carlson has plenty of money. He may say, I don't know. No, I don't think so, though. He strikes me as somebody who sincerely cares about the world and the people in it. So we want to switch gears a little bit. I see we have Ash there. It's not quite 3:30, but Ash, are you there? I see your
I'm here.
All right. Yay. Yay. Yeah, there you go.
Hey, guys.
Sometimes people come there, then they leave and go get a glass of water. And I come back to it if I come to them early. So,
yeah, no worries. How are you guys doing?
We're good. How are you doing?
How about you?
I'm good. I was listening to you guys talk about ChatGPT. And, yeah. You know, this is the innovation is moving so quickly. My big concern with this is the impact on truth, right? The impact on journalism. You know, have the computer writing articles for people. And I've had journalists defend this practice to me, which is bizarre. I can't get my head around it. Prep work, sure. Use ChatGPT for prep work on your writing, but write your own work. But did you see the National Archives is doing an exploratory project? We're paying for it, of course, looking at using ChatGPT or ChatGPT like tools to remove bias from our history.
Oh,
good. That'd be
sounds like 1984. Excellent. If I've ever
Well, yay for them, you know.
Yeah, thank God somebody's doing that.
Because they sure wouldn't want to have.
And they're, you know, they're going through Donald the books Trump and mentioned movies anywhere to make in sure his... that they all are appropriately sensitive to today's age.
Well, of course. You know, and again, I have, and we won't get into this because I want to talk about your column, but I have, and we need to get him on the show. My sister, my nephew, works at, this is all he does all day is our AI stuff, right? And he says it's interesting. He uses ChatGPT to search out and find codes to help him write these other things. And he said it is going to revolutionize thing. He said like fire or like a silicon chip. Yeah. He said it's even to get more. He some of the stuff he talks about that they're working on. And he's like, people won't even realize it. But he also said, though, initially, because it's a language learning model, it still is only as good as what you put into it, right? It's like when you teach your kid how to tell what a cat is. Well, if you keep telling your kid that the dog is a cat, the kid thinks the dog, you know what I mean? The child learns only so.
Yeah. I mean, part of it that I have trouble with is that ChatGPT is a toy compared to the nation state level capabilities that we have around AI and machine learning. And when you consider the impact of something that loads of net positives, right? I mean, I can have ChatGPT scan all of the major news sources and pull together to me into a very tight summary, all of the news that's going on all around the world way faster than I can research all of that myself. Right. And then I can very quickly, all like I'm saying prep work. I think there's great applications. Exactly. And one of the best parts is writing it to cover all of the government entity press rooms. So I don't actually have to go out and read all that stuff.
That's a good thing. I got to play with this more.
Right. But where is ethics? And I think what we've seen is, whether we go back to DALL-E and cloning, or we look at what they did in COVID, or, you know, there's a lack of ethics. Innovation always trumps ethics. They want the next shiny thing. They want to move. They want that capability. And nobody's having the ethical conversations. I think we need to force those conversations.
I think so, too. And at least at the very least, what he says is, because he is not in the school that thinks there's going to be a singularity where AI turns into Skynet. From the Terminator. And he doesn't think that's going to happen. But he says, I could be wrong. Don't know. We don't know. Yeah. He does say that. But he said what people need to educate themselves on it. Because he said it is going to be, he said, in an extremely short period of time everywhere. And people need to understand. Well, which kind of goes to, if you were to, because Ash has done a ton of work with Tina Peters, the Colorado former clerk and recorder, who is a complete bogus prosecutions. They're persecutions, really, has another one coming up. But if you were to just do a ChatGPT search of Tina Peters, I don't think we should maybe do that and see if it includes ever any of your work or any of the truth thing.
I can tell you, if you Google my art, like I'll Google the exact title of one of my articles in quotation marks, which should be an exact search according to how Google search works, and it won't show up until the fourth or fifth page. So, it depends. Again, like you were saying, Julie, who is programming these tools? What data is being used to train the machine learning models? That's really what the question is. And that's going to dictate your outcomes. And that's why ChatGPT has had so many woke moments, right? Because it's being developed and trained by a woke team.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, let's go to your column on Tina Peters, because we've got only a limited time altogether. Tell us about your column.
Sure. So Tina was back in court, as Julie said, a couple weeks ago. She, this case, and she will be back in court again next week. And then I believe that the trial was set to August for the larger trial, but I think that that might have been moved as well. And they're going to drag this out as long as they can. Right. Because that's what they do. But so she was in trial for obstruction of government, which to me just sounds like a good time, but apparently it's a crime. And she allegedly had an iPad that they wanted, that she restricted, you know, she resisted giving them the iPad. And then they said she resisted arrest and all these kinds of things. She was given an ankle monitor.
Right. For 6 months. Pretty much the max they could throw at her.
Uh-huh. Everything they can throw at her. And that's the thing that I think is so important to understand. In the column, I get into, you know, what is her crime?
Right.
What's Tina's crime? Right. Well, Tina exposed the fraud. Tina got the images and had the images analyzed, and through the analysis of those images by actual technical experts with, you know, dozens of years of experience doing, you know, cyber work, technology work, infrastructure, database work. The experts that participated in these, in the analysis of these reports, their resumes are off the charts.
Right.
And what we found is that there were 36 wireless connections. This was, of course, during the time when they told us the machines couldn't connect to the internet.
Right. They couldn't do it. Right.
Now they issue guidance and say, hey, clerks, don't let your machines reconnect to the internet. That started in November of 2021, that the Secretary of State's offices says to the clerks, hey, here's some steps to check and make sure that your machines don't accidentally connect to the internet.
They assured us that that's actually impossible.
Nobody was checking in 2020. In November of 2020, nobody was checking because nobody told them to check, because the narrative was the machines can't connect to the internet. You see how that works?
Right.
And so we found 36 wireless devices. We found new database logs being connected, like having a separate set of books where you have a separate record of the election on the back end. Just really egregious stuff that is a violation of the Help America Vote Act. It's a violation of Colorado state law, state election law. And what did they do? They went after Tina.
Right.
Instead of, you know, Dan Rubenstein, the DA of Mesa County, investigating
the crime,
investigating the evidence that his duly elected clerk brought to him.
Right.
Right. And the commissioners as well. You know, those commissioners, the first report came out, they sent it to the press before they ever had a chance to read it. Within seconds, it went to the press.
Right.
And so, and we know that from open records of their emails. And so instead of evaluating the evidence that the duly elected clerk of Mesa County brought to them, they demonized her and they went after her. And that, that kind of tells you everything that you need to know. Dan Rubenstein will say that he did an investigation of the third report, which shows actual vote swapping, shows the second set of books in Mesa County. He said that he did an investigation, did this, put on this whole big charade. We did a live stream of it. His investigation was done in collaboration with Dominion Voting Systems.
Well, there you go. That's like asking the chicken
to investigate the killing of the chicken. Right.
Exactly. Well, and I think one of the things too, we were at a meeting and Tina showed us the paperwork that, you know, if this was such a crime, apparently they told her, if you'll just drop this and go away, and if you'll quit talking about this, and if you'll just say you're wrong, we can make this all go away. Right. I mean, that right there proves it has everything to do with shutting her up and keeping her quiet and nothing to do with actual justice.
Well, and don't forget, if what Tina Peters did was a crime, then Senate Bill 22-153 from last year would be wholly unnecessary, because what that bill set out to do was make what Tina did a crime.
A crime, yeah.
Because what Tina didn't do wasn't a crime.
Right. So she did her job.
It was her responsibility under the law to protect the election records.
And you know what drives me?
We know they deleted the election records. The log files explicitly have to be retained, and they were deleted.
Well, and one of the things that drives me crazy is the media. We were, you know, talking about the Tucker Carlson and the corrupt media, no one believes. None of them have ever actually said, well, maybe we should explore what she said, right? Instead, they just go election denier, right? They did, you know, Colorado Republican Party now filled with election deniers. And what's that even mean? It's just, you know, it's just a phrase they make up, and they don't try to get to the truth. And instead, I think it is just so wrong. Again, what Tina Peters did, the obstruction, as I understand it, then she was convicted of this, was not giving them her password. And you know, we were,
no, it was not handing them,
not giving them the iPhone, or the iPad.
Right. Yeah. And then
somebody else's.
Well, and then she's in court next week for recording on that iPad, Belinda's, right. I think it was either Belinda or Sandy's trial. She was charged with
that.
Contempt of court. But, right.
Well, and I've said
that trial is live streamed. That it's a public trial that's publicly live streamed. She recorded it from inside the courtroom. So they're going to throw another book at her, right? And it is to go after the messenger. You look at what in Elbert County here in Colorado, much lesser known, but Dallas Schroeder did an image of the machines as well. He did it himself. He didn't have a third party do it. And so that's one of the differences between him and Tina. But the other difference is that he didn't analyze the data. And when the court demanded that he hand over those images, he handed them over. Now, what we could have done, what we could have seen Secretary of State do is compare the two sets, right? Here's Elbert, here's Mesa. This is not happening in Elbert. It happened in Mesa. We'll look into it, whatever. They didn't do that. They went after Dallas as hard as they could to get the images. They got the images, and then they largely backed off because they had what they needed, and he hadn't. Right. He hadn't put out the reports. He had, you know, he hadn't analyzed or provided anything that counteracts their narrative. That's the level of corruption.
The awful part about all of this is there's no checks and balances left in our system.
Yep.
The judges have seemed just as willing and more than willing to go after Tina, the quote unquote Republican DA. The Mesa County politicians. We used to have some belief that even if you had a rotten DA and some rotten politicians, at least the courts would help rectify it. And there's been nothing shown to date that the courts have been anything more, less or more than the January 6th courts in D.C., where they're just conviction machines to persecute people.
I know that, but I think five of the Proud Boys, their case is before the jury today, right? And I mean, do we have any doubt what'll happen?
Absolutely. I mean, the book at them. Yeah. And I mean, what's really frustrating to me about that is, I mean, you guys remember the summer of Bern Luton murder here in Denver, right? Yeah. Antifa ruled the city. They set up camp from the Capitol to Civic Center Park. And it was, you could not go down there safely.
Right.
After the election, the only reason that we were able to safely protest and march after the election of 2020 was because of the Proud Boys. It's because the Proud Boys were there and they had they were doing some sort of security response, right?
Right.
I mean, there were cops there too. State Patrol, Denver City cops wouldn't have anything to do with us, but State Patrol was there. State Patrol and Proud Boys were working sort of in collaboration with each other. And they did make it so that people who were, you know, not leftists and would be attacked by the meth demons in Antifa, and they are. They've spat at me. They followed me and my son to my car. They're absolute. You look in their eyes, you see meth and demons. Like, that's it.
Right.
But the Proud Boys, they weren't violent.
No.
They weren't out causing any sort of ruckus. Now, I'm not saying they're all, you know, that none of them have ever done any of those things, right? But certainly my experience, and I have a good amount of experience working with Proud Boys, both in Denver and in D.C., their focus was on protecting the liberties of the people, making sure that old people got back to their cars okay, making sure that women were never in the line of violence when show up. And so that's like this narrative that they've crafted that they're these, you know, horrible racists and everything. Most of the Proud Boys that I know are brown.
Or they're FBI agents, right? I mean, they're either that. Well, I know, and we had a similar experience when we were down for that, you know, police support the police rally where I got punched, right? And because the Denver police said.
You guys were there. I didn't realize you were there.
Oh, yeah. I got punched, by a BLM person, an Antifa person. And I was standing right next to Michelle Malkin and Deborah Flora was there and Casper Stockham and Chuck, you know. And the Denver police said, well, you were leaving. And we're like, what? Do you know what I mean? There was no protection there. And it's exactly what you said. It was the Proud Boys were going ahead and helping people. And all they were doing was helping people get to their cars. And they weren't fighting anybody. But they were there because the cops refused to do it. And now it makes me angry. Now quit ranting here. Every time I see that one of those stupid Antifa protesters is getting a settlement, right? I'm like, well, what about the cops witnessed me being assaulted? Right? Nothing. Right? And then you try to do the civil lawsuit and they're like, don't even bother. You know, you can't do
equity. It is an equitable justice system now. And, you know, you're not a protected class. So sorry, Julie.
I'm sorry.
Don't get justice.
No, there isn't any. Yeah. Well, it is. You know, and again, and for Tina Peters, that's why I think it's so important. And the articles at the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle. And I think you probably have it too at Ash in America, right?
I haven't thrown it up there yet, but I will. I will be putting it up there. I'm really behind on my Substack, but ashinamerica.substack.com. But yeah, it is up on Glendale now. It's up. I think it's pinned on my Twitter as well, right. And goes through, you know, kind of at a high level. Here's what she did. Here's what she found. And, you know, she's being persecuted for it. So she'll be back in court next week and on the contempt of court for recording the hearing, right. the public live streamed hearing.
Well,
and no other politician gets treated like this.
I covered courts for 30 years in Denver, and there would be several times when people would inadvertently or not realizing they couldn't. One of those times, as I said before, was John Hickenlooper's then wife was recording a court hearing and tried to lie about it too until the bailiff said, no, she was the one recording, right? All they do ever, I always say, seen, they tell them, don't do that again. If you do that again,
so she didn't get an ankle monitor.
No, she didn't. No, she didn't get a criminal charge.
They told her fine.
No, nope. She didn't get arrested. Weird. They didn't try to seize it from her. I mean, but I've seen plenty of people, particularly with cell phones in this day and age, not realize you can't record it, right? Because they don't always say that unless there's a big, giant, expanded media thing. And I've never seen
court TV and other ones in which people are.
And like you said, it's live streamed. So it's like she's not, you know, she could have sat at home and done a screen grab, right? Yeah. So that's the ridiculous thing. And it is. It has nothing to, you know, she has no equity either. She's not a protected class. And said she's
Not about Tina, right? It's about what Tina exposed. They have to engage in the cover up of the information that Tina exposed. That means demonizing Tina. That whenever the regime doesn't want to talk about something, they shoot the messenger and they shoot them often. And that's what's happening with Tina.
Right. Well, and then as you said, then, you know, if you're another clerk and recorder and you have some questions, are you going to push it? No. I mean, then they send a message to people.
Away from the clerks and recorder with their connivance, their own connivance. They said, yeah, please make us worthless.
Well, but to the point you made, Julie, there were a lot of clerks after the 2020 election and even through 2022 that had questions.
Right.
They go to Matt Crane. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So
he's a lobbyist for Dominion? Is that
so Matt Crane is the head of the Colorado County Clerks Association. He is their subject matter expert when it comes to elections. He is also on the poster for global mobile voting. He wants to vote by cell phone. His face is on the poster. He's the literal poster boy for global mobile voting. His wife worked for Dominion, for Sequoia, and then for Dominion. And so there, and he's very close with Jenna Griswold and the Secretary of State. He was lockstep with Jenna. Remember, he represents the clerks, right?
Right.
He's the subject matter expert for the clerks. A big part of their pitch in the CCCA is that they protect the clerks,
right?
Make sure the clerks are taken care of. When this happened, Tina Peters, who pays dues at the time, paid dues to the CCCA. Matt Crane, who's reportedly, allegedly a Republican, lined up shoulder to shoulder with Jenna Griswold to demonize. Not because what Tina did was wrong, not because what Jenna was saying was right, but because what Tina did exposes the problem with centralized technology-run elections, and he's all in on centralized technology-run elections. And as the head of the County Clerk Association, he's making sure that all of the other clerks are all in on centralized electronic.
And they see what happens if you're not all in. They're like, you want to ankle brace it? Listen, it's a great column, Ash. I'll give you.
I have to say, you know, we're getting a lot of feedback from our readers about your column, and your column is on page, I don't know, 25 or something. Yeah. So they're going
move
deep
it up
into
to
the
a,
paper
to, a,
to
move
read
it up to page one or page two.
How is the
feedback
to you,
though?
But you must understand that people tend to write in when they're mad at you.
No, I know. I get a lot of those people. They come to my Substack or my website. So that's why I said, how is the feedback? Because all of the feedback that I get from the column is generally from people who don't read me. Otherwise.
Well, let me read this stuff. It's like, first, you're a treasure, well-spoken and truthful. Charlene is saying, move it on up, Chuck. And then Sandra says, put Ash before Peter. Definitely. We won't.
I endorse that one.
One more time, where can people go find all of your stuff?
All of my stuff is at Linktree, linktree.com/AshinAmerica. The show that I'm really working on right now, I'm loving it. We're about to do episode number 9 this weekend. It's Culture of Change on Badlands Media, where we talk about the communication and change management tactics of the global corporate communists and break down how that's showing up in our actual lives and our kids' curriculum and our community centers and our libraries and all of it. So that's Sundays at 6 p.m. on Badlands Media, but everything is tagged at AshinAmerica on Linktree.
Perfect. All must right, listen.
Ash, great to have
thank you
on,
so much.
Always
so great
much to talk to you guys. For writing the column and keep up the good work.
Thanks so much.
All right, there you go. AshinAmerica. Yeah, that the stuff that they're doing there is great. And we'll keep you posted on what's going on with Tina as well. Because the next one is that on Rumble. I would go, Sandra, I would say the best way to find it is, like she said, go to Linktree because that has all the links there. I think
to Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicles there.
Right. No, she wants to talk. She's talking about her show. Charlene says Ash's Twitter is fire. It is. So the way it works is it's probably on another platform, but I don't know if they post it on Rumble. So Badlands Media, if you were to search up, like Rev says, badlandsmedia.com, you will find that there too. That's going to do it for us today. We got Party Friday coming up. Should be a good Party Friday. Chuck hard at work at the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle World Headquarters.
Making the world a better place for all.
For all. Hey, thank you to everybody. Thank you to Ash, the great guys at bbsradio.com, everyone on Zoom. And remember, you can catch all of our shows, links to whatever format you want to listen to them at chuckandjulie.com. Right. See you on Party Friday.
We'll see you on Party Friday.